This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. At age 4, Jaypreet Verdi's world went quiet. A severe bout of meningitis left her deaf and shifted how she navigated in the world, as is the experience with many deaf and hard of hearing people. Jaypreet went through all sorts of treatments said to, quote-unquote, cure her hearing. Her experience and a love of history led to the writing of a book. She joins us now to talk about it. Her book is called Hearing Happiness, Deafness Cures in History. Jaypreet is also an assistant professor of history at the University of Delaware in Newark, Delaware. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, Ara. Thank you for having me here. It's a great pleasure to be on the show. I'm a huge fan of Science Friday.
Well, thank you very much. I think our listeners would like to know, please, how are you able to hear me if you are deaf?
Well, first thing, I wear hearing aid. And we are currently communicating on a video conferencing platform that provides closed captioning, which does help me better understand some of the things that you are saying.
That's terrific. This topic of so-called miracle cures for deafness is, I understand that it's very personal for you. I'm hoping to start by you telling us a little bit about your personal experience with them.
Sure. One of the things that listeners should keep in mind is that many deaf children are actually born into hearing families who might not be familiar with deaf culture or sign language, and it is kind of a learning process. That was the case for me as well. So nobody in the hospital and none of my doctors were able to advise my parents on how to raise a deaf child. And my parents, being devout Sikh, you know, they turned to religion, they turned to family to kind of figure out what was the best way to help me grow up and be a happy child and how they could communicate with me. So they tried everything. They turned to my grandparents for advice on old folk remedies. We went to the temple to receive blessing. My mom even took me to India to get a special blessing at the Golden Temple. And we even tried hearing aids as well, but nothing really worked for me until we left Kuwait and immigrated to Canada, where I got a more powerful hearing aid and was placed into a special school for the deaf and hard of hearing children that allowed me to learn English again, allowed me to learn how to speak again and communicate in different ways.
What turned you toward researching deafness cures in history?
I was actually initially researching the history of medical anatomy, but became interested in how these anatomists were trying to classify types of hearing loss by looking at the anatomical defects or other kinds of medical problems that were basically in the eardrum or in the eustachian tube or in the anatomy of the ear. Following this line of research, I just started to realize there was a huge history of people trying this so-called miracle cure, that some of it was actually promised by the same anatomist and same ear specialist who were trying to figure out the hidden history, so to speak, of hearing. And I think because I resonated so much with the stories in the archives, you know, people are talking about trying this cure or receiving special blessing or being swindled by a crack seller. It dawned on to me that the history that I was researching in this archive, and historians, by the way, spend a lot of time in the archive, it also made sense to me because it felt like it was my own story being reflected back. So that's kind of what led to the book as well.
So this is a very personal book for you then?
Indeed, yes, definitely. And it's kind of a very terrifying experience as well. I mean, how much do I reveal myself in this book? I spent almost 25 years of my life trying to quote unquote pass as hearing, pretending that I wasn't as deaf as I actually was, trying to assimilate in hearing society, trying to appear as normal as possible. And opening the book by talking about my hearing loss is essentially me revealing to everybody, I'm deaf, here I am, world. I mean, I kind of talk about hearing happiness as my coming out story as a deaf woman and coming to terms with the kind of barriers that are in place for me to address, but also acknowledge a deep history as well. Why do so many deaf people try to pass as hearing? Why do society expect that from us? And why do we get so excited when we see, you know, this whole hearing for the first time videos or other stories of that people succeeding. Like, why do that turn us on when we don't really acknowledge your kind of struggles and unsurmountable barriers that are also in place in society, as well as the huge stigma against deafness?
And that's true, because I used to research the history of the telephone, as evidenced by Alexander Graham Bell, whose whole family tried to teach deaf people sign language, because there, as you say, it was very controversial. Deaf people have to learn how to speak, and it was not accepted that they have their own culture.
Yes, indeed. I mean, there seems to be this misconception about deaf history that on one side there was the sign language and the deaf with the capital D culture, and the other side there were those who called themselves as hard of hearing and people who wear hearing aids and use speech to communicate. But what deaf history actually is an audiological spectrum. There are various types of experiences, technology, communication, etc. But speech is always used as a marker of normalcy. It's the expectation that if a deaf person can manage speech, then they can pass the hearing. No one's going to really notice them. I mean, I can't tell you how many times people have said to me, you speak really well for a deaf person. And I have to explain to them, well, that's like 10 years of speech therapy. That's like me trying to make sense of auditory clues around me. But that's also my kind of internalized stigma. And with what society expected of me to succeed as a deaf person, where I think if I had also had sign language when I was young, it could have made things a lot easier for me. But one of the things that come across my book is the emphasis on speech is also part of a broader history of normalcy in which deaf people had to move away from the stigma of deaf dumbness, which is usually we still kind of do that as an insult when we say, what are you, deaf? Putting forward this idea that that's a less than type of human behavior.
You know, I can understand, as you say, the pressure on people to not be quote unquote deaf, but to be quote unquote normal. I can understand then, as the topic of your book, where all these cures come from, or even the phony ones, because people want to be that way, don't they, from society's pressure.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's this idea, what do we expect any citizen in society to do to uphold standards of normality? Like, what does a normal citizen look like? In many cases, you know, it's someone who is able-bodied, godly in many cases, self-sufficient, and hearing. Like, hearing is this marker of normality because we believe that anything that deviates from that is abnormal. So if you put this pressure on deaf people that they have to achieve to this higher standard of normality, that includes being hearing, even if all you're doing is pretending to be hearing.
So let's talk about the very interesting and fascinating things you've discovered in your research. First, let's talk about how far back in history have people been looking for cures for deafness and hearing loss? I imagine it goes back hundreds of years.
I would imagine that as long as people had experienced hearing loss, they have devised some kind of ways to alleviate it or deal with it, maybe even cure it. But I think your question for an historian would be better rephrased as, how far back did the historical evidence go? You know, where in the archive did I find these kind of stories? I mean, I have found people talking about folk remedies and using botanicals, so using herbs and plants and animal products to devise some kind of treatment. And there's evidence people have used things like berries or garlic. Garlic is another one, because garlic is known for its antibacterial and diuretic properties. So there's lots of histories in there as well. So these cues aren't just about medicine or surgery or even technology. They're really about people making sense of the environment around them and trying to turn to nature and use botanical to cure the hearing.
But as you say in your book, there are really no such things as real cures, are there?
Cures can have a very flexible type of meaning. I mean, a surgery that can help someone who has otoscolosis, which is a buildup of calcium in the ear bone, then it's kind of a hereditary disease, that can actually be promoted as a cure. A hearing aid can be considered a cure. But if we're talking about drinking coffee on the belief that it will flush out your system and therefore restore your hearing. If we're talking about ear candling as a solution, then no, these aren't really cured. But the promise that they're offering, this hope of normal hearing, I think that is also a common thread amongst all these different kinds of cures.
I want to talk about one so-called cure in your book that just blew me away. There have been cases of people airplane diving as a treatment for deafness. Tell us about that.
Airplane diving is actually probably the most surprising fact I discovered when researching this book. I mean, I thought it was this one-off story about a man going up on a plane because he heard from somebody else that the loops and spirals and dives that the 1920s plane could do could somehow relieve ear pressure. So when you land, you are miraculously cured. I thought it was a one-off story, but looking at newspaper archives, it was very popular. Like, it was a 1920s fad. Like, people generally believe that if you go up in the air, there's something magical that happens in there that cannot be replicated down on Earth, and that the air pressure targets your eustachian tube, which is the tube connecting your pharynx and your ear passages, and then relieve this pressure. I mean, parents were sending their children as young as 1 year old, children screaming and crying and like going up on these planes. And even with all these plane crashes, people were still not deterred from trying these experiments. And again, it tells you something about this huge cultural stigma against deafness. You are willing to put yourself in harm's way and go up in the air and do this really terrifying stunt diving because you have this sure promise when you land, your hearing will be restored. And I think it's probably the most extreme example of a deafness cure.
I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Science Friday from WNYC Studios. Talking with Jaypreet Virdi about her new book, Hearing Happiness, Deafness Cures in History. We heard from a lot of listeners on our Science Friday Vox Pop app who use hearing aids or have cochlear implants, and here's what Anne from Forestville, California said.
Hi, I have bilateral profound hearing loss and have bilateral cochlear implants. They've definitely been a miracle cure for me, and I have no idea what my life would be like if I didn't have access to this amazing technology.
Do you consider these tech-based solutions miracle cures?
Definitely. I mean, deafness is an auditory spectrum. The way people negotiate with these kinds of cures and treatments, how they, in other words, position their bodies and their ability to make sense of their community is up to them. Like the kind of what I refer to as negotiation between the self and the environment in the book, that is a really personal experience. So for some people, cochlear implants give them this most amazing tool to pick up on auditory cues, to learn how to speak and learn how to hear on the telephone and things like that. So for your caller, you know, it is definitely a miracle cure because it gives them something to succeed in society they may not have otherwise had before. And for me, hearing aids do that. Closed captioning do that. Sign language, not so much because I'm not that fluent in sign language. And there aren't many people around me who also rely on sign language. But it is really a kind of personal process where deaf people try to find the best tools for themselves to navigate in the hearing world.
Do you think that society is going to change, or has it changed a lot in terms of how it understands and accepts deafness?
I really wish I could take an optimistic stance and say yes, but one thing I have seen in my research is that the same kind of promotion for deafness cures that we see now, things like not just digital hearing aids or auditory brain implants, but also like genetic engineering, like the whole CRISPR technology, all of them propagate the same rhetoric that deafness is a problem and needs to be fixed that I have seen in the 18th and 19th centuries and even the early 20th century. It is notion that if you are deaf, you have to fix yourself. You have to restore to one of the many types of cures, whether they're surgery or technology or other kind of folk remedies, and then restore yourself back to normal. So that is a huge problem. But I also see another problem in society in which we don't acknowledge the fact that there are social barriers in place that prevent deaf people from advocating for themselves and even being able to fully participate in society. I mean, closed captioning is one thing. And I know with this whole lockdown and in the middle of the pandemic, basically, we are living in a society where we are relying so much on communicating through videos and audio and things like that. And yet, I see many instances in which huge platforms either post recordings of audio without transcript or post videos without captioning, with the assumption that, well, there aren't that many people who are going to benefit from it. And that's exactly the problem. That's not the point. The point is to make things accessible for everybody. And as I talk about a lot, it's really not that hard to come up with transcripts or provide accessible platforms or put captioning on your video. And there are many different apps that allow people to do that. But taking the time to be accessible and not doing that further creates all these barriers and makes it a tremendous struggle and challenge for deaf people who need access to continue advocating for themselves.
Well, I hope we've done some advocating on this program today. I'd like to thank you very much. It's an excellent book. Jaypreet Virdi, author of the new book, Hearing Happiness, Deafness Cures in History. She's also an assistant professor of history at the University of Delaware in Newark, Delaware. Thank you for writing the book, and thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.